Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. This month, more public pressure on mega tax avoiding companies. Google was recalled to explain itself at the UK Parliament's Public Accounts Committee on its tax affairs. Apple appeared before a US Senate hearing accused of being one of the US's largest corporate tax avoiders while holding tens of billions of dollars offshore. Here's Apple's CEO Tim Cook explaining to Senator McCaskill why Apple offshores their money.
We were faced with a decision to go that route or pay 35% to repatriate.
Ireland gave you a 2% rate, which was negotiated for your company, correct?
As a part of recruiting us, the Irish government did give us a tax incentive agreement to enter there. The barrier right now in terms of repatriating cash is that it's repatriated at the 35% level. And so our proposal is that we eliminate all corporate tax expenditures and have a reasonable tax on bringing money back from overseas.
Perhaps he'd like the United States to match Ireland's 2%. Also this month, we've had two civil society groups trying to bring their revenue authorities to book in court over failures to tax companies properly. In Uganda, a group of 14,500 teachers and 50,000 small business owners have sought permission from the High Court to sue their revenue authority. They accuse them of allowing 116 companies to evade tax. In Britain, UK Uncut claimed the UK Revenue Service illegally let investment bank Goldman Sachs off £20 million in interest on an unpaid tax on bonuses. The judge agreed the settlement wasn't what he called a glorious episode, and it was done without proper legal advice. But he also ruled it was lawful for HMRC Revenue Authority officials to take into account Goldman Sachs's threats to withdraw from the Code of Practice on Taxation for Banks in coming to their decision. UK Uncut's Murray Worthy, outside the High Court.
Normally these deals are done completely in secret. By taking this legal action, we've been able to show what does happen behind these deals. The HMRC aren't taking a tough line with tax avoiders, while at the same time they're attacking public services, cutting the welfare state and cutting legal aid, hitting the most marginalised people in our society.
And finally, out this month, a free e-book from the Tax Justice Network. The Finance Curse: How Oversized Financial Centres Attack Democracy and Corrupt Economies. To download your copy, go to the Tax Justice Network blog on www.taxjustice.blogspot.com. It should be on every G8 leader's reading list. Those are the TaxCast headlines for this month. Now we're going to talk to the director of the Tax Justice Network, John Christensen, for his take on this month. Okay, John, the European Savings Tax Directive isn't perfect by any means, but it's probably the most effective multilateral action being taken anywhere on transparency at the moment. I mean, we've got the United States with FATCA, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, but that's aimed at US taxpayers using foreign accounts, while the US banks are quite happy to allow foreign nationals, non-US citizens, to stash their money away from their tax authorities. So it's not really a two-way ticket. So I'm just wondering, with all this concerted action for transparency by the European Union, we're also seeing in the UK a big push to get the UK out of the EU. We've had this month the British Prime Minister suddenly offering his citizens an in-out referendum. He did that after a pretty large protest vote in local elections for a party called UKIP that wants to get the UK out of the EU. They've been getting a lot of party political funding from some pretty wealthy people, some of them who were previous donors to the Conservative Party, and we know already that a lot of their funding comes from the City of London's finance sector. Head of UKIP is a former City of London commodities trader, so surely there must be some tax haven-friendly forces and interests behind all this.
The current discussion in Britain around the whole issue of whether or not to stay within the European Union is being orchestrated, and it's being orchestrated by some very, very powerful and influential people, many of whom come out of the City of London and therefore have offshore financial interests. I don't think it's a coincidence that this is happening at this particular moment. The European Union is wanting to take very strong action, not only to regulate financial services much more strongly than has been the case until now, but also they're wanting to move forward with a financial transaction tax. And some countries have already agreed to move forward on a financial transaction tax. And this is precisely what the City of London wishes to avoid. They wish to avoid regulation because actually their business model is built very strongly around lax regulation. And they want to avoid a financial transaction tax because much of the trading that happens within the City of London is very, very high volume, thin margin trading. In other words, they are making their profits on very small margins, but involving huge transactions on a massive scale. And that's precisely what a financial transaction tax would impact most heavily on. In fact, it's designed to achieve that outcome. So the City of London is very, very worried about the European Union's project. I think it's not coincidental that the emergence of a party like United Kingdom Independence Party, which wants to remove Britain from the European Union and has very, very strong City of London links, has come through at this moment. It's a massive distraction from what's really important, which is the fact that the UK economy, like the rest of the European economy, is not performing. But this distracts attention away from the politics of austerity, which have clearly failed.
There's a quite big interest in creating a sort of Britzerland, which I'm sure the City of London would be very happy about, to club together with Switzerland as a kind of an outer tier of the European Union.
That's right. I mean, the whole idea behind Britzerland is to create a slightly in-out model which offers offshore financial services sitting alongside the European Union with some kind of free trade arrangement, but not politically linked to the European Union, and of course not in any kind of monetary link with the European Union. I can see absolutely no advantage to the European Union from this proposal whatsoever. In fact, quite the opposite. I think this would be a great potential source of damage to the European Union, and I can't see why the European Union would concede to such a model. From the British point of view, this might be highly damaging anyway, partly because Britain clearly suffers from the finance curse, too much finance, an overstrong currency, which has weakened British exports of manufactured and other goods at a very time when the global pressure is to move away from the secretive banking models and the offshore financial centres towards a much more open and transparent global economy. So I don't think that this is a sustainable model.
Right, let's move on to the G8 summit next month. We've been talking a lot about this on the TaxCast. Now, the UK government has got presidency of the G8. We've got UK politicians in the government posing as tax justice heroes at the moment, leading the battle charge against tax havens. Of course, we've been here before, haven't we, in the last G8 in 2009. The Tax Justice Network blog this month said politicians are faced with two choices now. A, they can do the right thing, or B, they can do the wrong thing but be seen to be doing the right thing. I'm wondering if this is a good example where the UK government has made a big announcement that there's going to be, quote, much greater levels of information about bank accounts to be exchanged on a multilateral basis, close quote. So we've got places like Bermuda, the British Virgin Islands, Montserrat, the Turks and Caicos Islands, the Isle of Man, Gibraltar. They've agreed to pilot an automatic exchange of information scheme with the G5, which is the UK, France, Germany, Italy and Spain. But the Tax Justice Network thinks it might be missing the point, this agreement.
At the moment, everything would appear to be going the tax justice way. Our language is being adopted by politicians. We have the Prime Minister of Britain, David Cameron, as president of G8, saying that this is the time to move forward. And it all sounds terrific. But we'll need to be very, very, very careful to look at the detail of what happens. Everyone's now agreed that automatic information exchange is the correct way of moving forward. But we need to make sure that if they adopt automatic information exchange, it is not restricted just to individuals. It also covers companies and trusts and foundations, and it covers a wide range of incomes At the same time, we've had the Prime Minister saying that we must now have proper registries which require British tax havens to register information about company ownership. And of course, this has been another one of our core demands for many years. But again, we must look at the detail here, because if they create registries, these registries must be available publicly. They must be available for everyone, investigating journalists, the general public, NGOs. This must not be a case where only the governments of the tax havens have access to this information about beneficial ownership. Of course, we should welcome the very fact that they're talking our language. Even if they're only talking the talk and not walking the walk, they're reacting to us precisely because the public pressure is building up and the public supports the Tax Justice Network.
John Christensen, head of the Tax Justice Network. And now for the TaxCast special feature. Whether you're an illicit arms trafficker or a supposedly legitimate government-to-government arms broker and weapons manufacturer, it seems there's nothing you like better than the secrecy that tax havens provide. This month, the TaxCast looks at tax havens and death. How secrecy kills.
There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11? The real money's in actual wars.
Yeah. Always in the wrong place at the right time.
No one can stop this bath of blood.
The arms trafficker Victor Boot was so notorious, actor Nicolas Cage starred in a role modelled on him in the movie Lord of War years before Boot was charged. In 2012, Boot was finally convicted and jailed in the United States for 25 years.
One, conspiring to kill United States nationals. Two, conspiring to kill United States officers and employees. Three, conspiring to use and acquire anti-aircraft missiles. And four, conspiring to provide material support to the FARC. The so-called Merchant of Death is now a federal inmate.
Name any war-torn country you like, and Victor Boot seems to have played a part in fueling conflict there during his long and lucrative career selling weapons. Former United Nations arms trade investigator Kathy Lynn Austin tracked him for years to gather the evidence against him. Here she is on the radio show Democracy Now!
I went into Eastern Congo and Rwanda in the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide. There was a UN arms embargo in place at the time, and I was tracking and monitoring who was violating that UN sanctions regime. Victor Boot's name kept cropping up as one of the lead entrepreneurs willing to facilitate weapons into the area to both sides of the conflict.
And it's no surprise that a man like Boot was a prolific user of tax havens and the secrecy they offer to hide your identity. Stephanie Osfeld of Global Witness.
We know that at least 12 of these shell companies that he used were incorporated in the United States, in the states of Texas, Florida, and Delaware. And it's really not just Boot. He's not the only arms dealer that exploits the opacity of shell companies to sell weapons. It's been used by many arms traffickers. Slobodan Milosevic used a network of thousands of shell companies from Cyprus to provide arms for the war against Bosnia and Kosovo.
All because tax haven secrecy provides a sanctions-busting paradise. It slows investigations right down and can stop them completely. So you can make millions selling weapons anywhere you like, hide your identity through layers of anonymous shell companies, bribe officials, and obscure the identity of the end user, your final purchaser. And it's not just black market arms traders who love tax havens. British defence company BAE Systems is a big fan too. Researcher of the arms trade and offshore structures, Daniel McKenzie.
Tanzania is a very poor sub-Saharan African country, and they have limited air force capacity. Yet BAE negotiated a deal for the Tanzanian government to buy a military radar system. Now, not only was this in breach to World Bank and IMF standards, but they also grossly inflated the cost of the system. The system should have cost $12 million, but it was raised to $40 million. It's been alleged that the extra $28 million was used to pay off officials to convince them to purchase the system. This deal operated through companies in the British Virgin Islands, Mauritius, and in Jersey.
BAE Systems also sold warplanes to Saudi Arabia in the famous Al Yamamar deal. It was described as the biggest sale ever of anything to anyone. It was underwritten by the UK's Export Credit Guarantee Department, a kind of taxpayer-funded insurance system. Daniel McKenzie.
Saudi Arabia didn't want to originally buy planes from Britain. They wanted to buy American planes. They wanted F-15s. And it took a lot of diplomatic conversation. It took a lot of financial incentives to get the Saudi Arabian government to buy the British planes. At the beginning of the deal, the basic price of the planes were inflated by 32% to allow for an initial £600 million slush fund for commissions. But since then, police have calculated that roughly £6 billion may have been distributed in corrupt commissions. And this is out of a £46 billion deal that has been going on over the past 20 years. During the Al Yamamar deal, BAE used front companies in offshore jurisdictions such as Switzerland and in the British Virgin Islands. And the secrecy that these tax havens provided meant that BAE were able to give financial incentives to corrupt officials and also make the deal beyond any investigation.
Even when the UK's Serious Fraud Office did investigate, the British government ordered them to drop it in the interests of national security. But let's go back to Victor Boot, the merchant of death, portrayed as a purely black market arms dealer. Here's his tracker, former United Nations arms trade investigator Kathy Lynn Austin again.
I'm very happy that justice has been served in the sense that he will be put away for 25 years. So he will be taken out of the equation. I think that we can expect a lot of the world to be far more peaceful as a result. But the U.S. government hasn't come clean. I collected forensic evidence. I collected documentary evidence in the field. And even as I was bringing forward that information, I was testifying before the U.S. Congress. I was talking to U.S. State Department intelligence officials. Still, there was no action taken against Victor Boot. And that was because the U.S. government saw that his services were very valuable for national security operations. The most recent case where American officials and American private security firms were colluding with Victor Boot was during the Iraq War. During the trial and the sentencing, Victor Boot wrote to the judge basically saying, look, I've also worked for the U.S. companies. They've paid me $6 million. That's probably, by the way, just the tip of the iceberg. So why would you be convicting me when, in fact, at the time that I was providing these services for the U.S. government, it was in violation of a U.S. law, an executive order signed by President Bush at the time, and it was in violation of U.N. sanctions.
OK, so we know the arms trade is a dirty business. And there's a kind of blurring between the BAEs of this world, the lords of war and national security and commercial interests. But surely after the 9/11 attacks, a country like the United States closed the loopholes allowing easy movement of criminal cash across borders. Well, no. The report Global Shell Games from Australia's Griffith University ranked the United States among the easiest jurisdictions in the world to form a company without revealing the identity of who actually owns and controls it. Stephanie Osfeld of Global Witness.
The ability to incorporate anonymously is a huge loophole in U.S. law, and it's also a loophole in laws around the world. It's a particular problem in the United States because we incorporate around 2 million companies each year, which is more than the rest of the world combined. And almost every state collects less identifying information from people who wish to form these companies than from people who are seeking to obtain a driver's license or register to vote. Some states require the listing of shareholders, but shareholders can often be other companies that have anonymous ownership, or they can be nominees who really serve as front people or service providers for the actual shareholder. So it's impossible to know who ultimately owns or controls American companies.
And the role played by other powerful G8 countries is also key. Daniel McKenzie.
A company that's registered in the UK has a lot more respectability than a company that's registered in the Cayman Islands. It makes it a lot more likely that you're going to be able to get your export license. It makes it a lot more likely that you're going to be able to get your end user certificate, which is necessary for buying weapons. A company that's registered in the UK will have an address in the UK, and it might have letters with headers that suggest that the company is subject to stringent UK transfer laws. But in reality, that company might be owned by a trust in the British Virgin Islands, or in Turks and Caicos, or anywhere similar to that.
Kathy Lynn Austin again.
What I have been calling for in a number of other organizations is, unless the arms trade treaty includes these types of intermediaries, the arms traffickers, the brokers, the transport agents, the financial agents, unless that treaty includes their activities, then we will continue to see the black market thrive.
And not only the black market. Daniel McKenzie.
The offshore financial system facilitates corruption. Secrecy jurisdictions provide routes around regulation that is meant to save lives. The majority of the world's shipping fleet is owned by corporate vehicles registered in secrecy jurisdictions. I think the main issue is that economic structures at large, and more specifically the offshore financial structure, are not seen as security issues. And until that perception changes, we're going to have flawed international security policy.
So here's the question. The evidence on corporate secrecy is clear. Why don't governments take action? The solutions aren't rocket science. Stephanie Osfeld.
Arms traffickers and other criminals, they rely on two things to move their dirty money. That's company structures that allow them to hide their identity, and banks and other professionals like lawyers and accountants who are willing to do business with them. Every country needs to require all companies and trusts within its borders to disclose who ultimately owns and controls them. And this needs to be published in a registry that's accessible not only to law enforcement, to banks and the general public as well. And G8 countries must also put pressure on the secrecy jurisdictions with which they have relationships to adopt a similar standard.
And while our governments fail to take this simple action, the killing, the corruption, and those profiting anonymously from it goes on.
You know who's going to inherit the earth? Arms dealers. Because everyone else is too busy killing each other. That's the secret to survival.
You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. For more Taxcasts, you can now find us on iTunes or go to www.tackletaxhavens.com. We'll have more news and analysis next month.